tonight we're going to continue this conversation we're having about how we move forward. And it doesn't mean that we're stuck. It's not that I don't like where we're at, but as I was praying about a month ago and asking the Lord, you know, what do we do with everything that we've been doing in the past couple of years and all the things that we've done as far as preparing our hearts for Jesus and our study of the end times and the book of Revelation for years and years and years. And are we supposed to continue that? And then there was this new focus with the emergency support shelter next door coming in and how we were feeling led to change some things, the direction that we're going because of that. And then just wanting us to be relevant, you know, in God's sight here, be pleasing to the Lord and relevant to him. And I'm just like, Lord, what do you want us to do? How do you want us to move forward? And he said, well, I want you to do it all. I don't want you to leave anything behind. I don't want you to start anything necessarily new. I just want you to keep going. And so my, you know, obviously my question was, how does that work, Lord? And he said, well, you do it in a past way, in a present way, in a future way. You take it all. You move forward, and you move your past forward. You are aware of the present, but there's also a future tense that you're supposed to look at. And so that's where this diagram came. Do you have notes? Okay. We're following the notes. I've abandoned technology for a while because I hate it. Not really. I don't really hate it. It's just deceived me and it's betrayed me so many times. I feel like this is safer. Anybody else need notes? Anybody need them? Okay, you're all taken care of. Good. So he gave me this picture, this diagram of how we move forward. And it involves preparing, well, the sentence at the top says it all. Prepare our hearts to dwell in his presence and be led prophetically. There's some really, what does it mean to prepare your hearts? What does it mean to dwell in his presence? And what does it mean to be led prophetically? All those things are a part of us moving forward as a congregation. And I don't think this is just us as a congregation. I really believe with all my heart this is us as a city. I have a huge investment into Kelso Longview as a city, and I love this city. In fact, I was sitting at Zojo on the sidewalk today looking over the city as I drank my coffee and thinking, this is my city. This is the city I love. Somebody came up to me and said, welcome home from vacation. I said, it's good to be home. This is my place. This is where I live. This is where God has placed me, and I love this place. And so I really think that when he speaks something to a leader who's embraced the city, he's really speaking to the city in a lot of ways. And so I don't say that pridefully, but I'm not going to back away from that either, because the investment's been a good investment over these last however many years, 23 years? How long has it been? Is that it? Wow. So this is how we move forward. We move forward, first of all, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago, and let's just do a little bit of review. The way forward, part of the way forward is that we prepare our hearts. And that's really what came out tonight. And to me, it was just God reemphasizing, the Holy Spirit reemphasizing what we've been talking about. God's preparing our hearts, not for an assignment, but like Cindy said tonight, he's preparing our hearts for him, for himself. That's what he wants. He wants us to be connected with him. And the question I have for you is, are you more confident in God? And the reason I say confidence is because the evidence of a prepared heart is your confidence in God, not your confidence in you. If you are more confident in God now than you were two or three years ago, I'd say he's been preparing your heart. If you're more fearful and full of doubt and skeptical after the last couple years, I think that you probably haven't connected with what he's trying to say, because he's been trying to say some specific things these last couple years. My sense is that we are more confident in him than we were a couple years ago, which is proof to me that he's preparing our hearts. He's captivating our hearts. Point number two, Jesus is thoroughly committed to establishing a significant relationship with him. This is out of Jeremiah 32, and I love this. I will give them one heart and one purpose. Yes, to worship me forever. This is the reason why he's given us one heart and one purpose, so that we'll worship him forever, not just while we're here on earth, but forever. for their own good and for the good of their descendants. I will make an everlasting covenant with them. I will never stop doing good for them. I will put desire in their heart to worship me, and they will never leave me. So Jesus' part in this is huge. This is what, by the way, Jeremiah 32 is what a covenant looks like. God's made a covenant with us. He's covenanted with us. He doesn't need our permission to do that. He made a choice to make a covenant with us. It says, I will do this. I will. I will. I will. And then our part is at the end, and they will never leave me. And it's not because he's got us held up in chains. It's because he loved us. Our response to him is to love him back. That's our response. Our response is, they'll never leave me. And he knew that would be our response. So he doesn't have us locked up in chains, but he knows that we're going to choose him. So his part in the process is huge in this covenant. Our hope comes from our trust in who he is. Listen to this. It's Psalm 33. We put our hope in the Lord, right? He's our help and our shield, right? In him our hearts rejoice, right? We trust in his holy name, right? It's like he's telling you who you are. He's telling you what you're about. He's telling you what's important to you. Let your unfailing love surround us, Lord, for our hope is in you alone. And that's where we're at right now. We're putting our trust, our hope, our faith in him, that he is who he says he is. And trusting brings confidence. It permits us to see God's true character and feel God's true character and experience God's true character. It causes us to realize his greatness and his tenderness, all the things about who he is, his amazing love. Again, our confidence is the evidence of a prepared heart. If he's preparing your heart, you're going to have more and more confidence in him. Not confidence in yourself. It doesn't go very far. You will run out of confidence if your confidence is in yourself. You know, ask anybody who's pursued a dream, and if their confidence is totally in what they can do, that dream is hard to capture. It's hard to stay on course. But if your confidence is in him, I mean, close your eyes for a second. Can you think of one thing that the Lord has promised you? A promise that he's given you. Raise your hand. If you don't open your eyes, just raise your hand. Can you think of one thing that he's promised you? You can put your hands down. I don't know why I had you raise your hands. You had your eyes closed. That's kind of dumb. Two-thirds of the people had your hands up, just for those who are wondering. But you can remember the promises of God. Those promises are true. They're right. Your confidence isn't in your ability to capture those promises. The promises are true, and you have confidence because you have confidence in God, that he's going to fulfill those promises. There's a lot of promises in this room. I assume that if you raise your hand about a promise he's given you, that hasn't been fulfilled yet. Or you have children, because if you have kids, you're banking on those promises being true, you know? Those things are about to happen. Those things are coming to pass. God will take care of us. Our confidence is in him. I don't worry about stuff like that anymore. People ask me where Evangel's going, what we're going to do, and I'm confident in him. I'm confident he knows exactly where we're going. He knows exactly what is in front of us. And it isn't really all that important that I do. But I want to stay focused on him. And tonight we're going to talk about the second part of moving forward, which is delightful to talk about. It's delightful to learn about. And it's that what it means to dwell in his presence. See, I believe we got to bring the past in and the preparation that he's been doing. But if we miss out on learning and understanding what it means to dwell in his presence, we're never going to get where he wants us to go. Because it's a moment by moment, minute by minute relationship with God. That's what faith is. Faith, the reason why faith is a big deal to God is because he's all about relationship. He could have done this whole thing without faith, but it wouldn't require anything on our part. We would be like robots. He wants relationship with us, so he wants us to walk in faith. And to dwell in his presence is a big part of that is walking in faith. So we're going to look at four things that have to do that kind of talk about what it means to dwell in his presence. And these are just four things that I think are important. There's probably more. It could be a lot less. Maybe it's only one thing. I'll go along with anything. I mean, I as long as it's biblical. I mean, I will. It doesn't have to be these four things. But these are four things that I think are important. And they are paying attention, listening, responding, and then something that I have, and I didn't exactly know how to put this, so I just call it re-envisioning. And it'll make more sense when we get there. So these are how you dwell in his presence. Paying attention, listening, responding, and then re-envisioning. So let's go through these a little bit. If you've got notes, you've got the same notes I have. What does it mean to dwell in his presence? Well, first of all, we have to pay attention. Another word for this is discernment. We have to be able to discern his presence, discern what's going on around us, what's in our midst. I mean, if you're going to dwell in his presence, you've got to pay attention to what's going on around you. There are times when you're very alone in his presence. There are times when you feel really close to him. There are times when you sense that there are other, you know, there's a negative force around you. There's a demonic force around you. There's times when you feel like there's an angelic force around you. You have to have discernment if you're going to be a person who dwells in his presence. Not because you have to do something with it, but because it's all about relationship. You're in his presence. And God doesn't just sit in a vault up in heaven alone. Look at Revelation chapter 4 and 5. He's surrounded by things, loud noises and flashes and thunder and angels and seraphim and all kinds of creatures and elders. People are all around and they're doing things and there's just lots going on around him. He doesn't live in a vacuum. He lives in a relationship with us all the time. So when you sit down in a chair and you say, I want to spend some time in your presence, Lord, you invite yourself into him, into his world. It isn't like you're inviting him into your world. You're inviting yourself into his world. And his world is wild, active, dynamic. His world is not boring. If you think spending quiet time is boring, you're not in his world. You're asking him to come into your world, and he's like, I'm not sure I want to, you know. Prove to me that this is worth, you know, my time. You know, I'm just kidding, but he wants us to come into his world. He wants us to come spend time with him. Discernment's important. Numerous times this congregation has been pointed back to the tribe of Issachar. It's out of First Chronicles chapter 12. This tribe was one of the 12 tribes, but the hallmark of this tribe was that they understood the times and knew what to do. That's who I want. I want to be that guy. I want to be that Issacharian. I want to be the guy who knows the time and knows what to do. I want to know that in Longview. I want to know what he's saying and what he's doing. I want to listen. I want to pay attention to what he's doing. So paying attention is a big, big deal. We are created with a huge capacity to know and enjoy his presence. It's counterproductive. And I think somebody said this. Maybe it was Cindy or Tammy. Somebody said this tonight that we can't, works are not part of this whole thing. Performance is not part of this. He wants us to know that there's a huge capacity to know and enjoy his presence because that's who he is. We are created beings, crafted by Jesus, born to dwell in his presence and thoroughly enjoy him. That's what we were born for. We were created for his presence. So it's not a foreign place to us. It's a place that we were created to know. And we have a huge capacity to understand his presence. It's not a hard thing at all. It's in our DNA. And the importance of this is stated in the Shorter Catechism. A long time ago, before most of you were born, like in the Pilgrim's time, they had this test that they gave Christians to tell if they were really Christians. It was called the Shorter Catechism, and it was a series of questions and answers. And in order to be a Christian, you had to answer every question perfectly. That would leave some of us out if they took it. We were asked to take that test right now. I mean, you had to answer every, and there's like 122 questions, something like that. This is the first question. So the first question they ask you on the test is, what is the chief end of man? And there is an answer to that question. And you're only given a correct, you know, check if you answer it perfectly. And the answer to the question is to glorify God and enjoy Him forever. Now, if you were going to make a test about being a Christian, how many of you would make that the first question and that the first answer? I mean, to glorify God and enjoy, I can see glorify God and work your tail off for the rest of your life to make Him happy. I mean, isn't that the sense you get of the early Christian pioneers? You know, is that they were like rugged, hard. They went to church 9 times a day, and you know, they suffered for the gospel, and their answer to that question was, the chief end of man is to glorify God and enjoy Him forever. That's a great answer. That's a great answer to that question. That's what it's all about. I love what Augustine said. He's an old guy too. He's dead a long time ago. But he wrote some amazing things about a relationship with God. And this is what he said. To fall in love with God is the greatest romance. To seek Him, the greatest adventure. To find Him, the greatest human achievement. That's it. That's what we're going for. That's Him having our heart. That's the journey we're on. Psalm 139 says, O Lord, You have examined my heart. You know everything about me. You know what? Didn't I read this tonight? I think this is what we started worship with tonight. You've examined my heart. You know when I sit down and stand up. You know my thoughts even when I'm far away. You see me when I travel and I rest at home. You know everything I do. You know what I'm going to say even before I say it, Lord. This is a God who knows You. This is a God who wants to spend time with You in His presence. He wants us to be with Him. His presence can't be explained, only experienced. And this is where most people fall down when it comes to having a time, understanding what it means to dwell in His presence. Most of us believe that dwelling in His presence is something that we do in a quiet time. We pray, we read a couple scriptures, that kind of thing, and that's being in His presence. But that's not the experience that we're looking for. We never really know how wide, how long, how high, and how deep God's love really is until we experience it. It's really like the air we breathe. That's what it's more like. It's the food we eat. I put down Marie Barnett's song, Breathe. You are the air that I breathe. You are the air I breathe. Your holy presence living in me. You are my daily bread. Your very word spoken to me. Paul says it well when he writes this prayer to the church in Ephesus. I pray that from His glorious unlimited resources, that's a lot. There's a lot there. I pray that from His glorious unlimited resources, He will empower you with inner strength through His Spirit. Then Christ will make His home in your hearts as you trust Him. That's what we're after. That's what we want. That's what I want. I want that kind of relationship. Your roots will go down deep into God's love and keep you strong. And may you have the power to understand, as all God's people should, how high, how wide, how long, how high, and how deep His love really is. So, you know, about 1 o'clock this afternoon, I'm thinking, I'm teaching about dwelling in His presence. I probably should do it for a little bit. So I sat down on my patio. I just quieted my soul, you know, settle down. I know my notes, you know, I know these 4 things. But it's so hard to do. It's so hard to close everything else out. I can see from my vantage point all the things that I need to do in my yard that are pulling at me, saying, come, fix this, change this, clean this. And I do a couple of those, I'm being honest. You know, it's hard. It's hard when you try to really dwell in His presence, really take the time to dwell in. I mean, it's Him. It's God. The God of the universe wants to spend time with me. So I just shut my eyes, because that's the only way I can close out all these distractions. And I'm like, Lord, what really matters? Because all I really want to know as I'm sitting here right now on a Sunday afternoon is I just want to know what matters. And all of a sudden I had this impression. It was gentle. It was quiet. It wasn't like, listen up, idiot. It wasn't like that at all, because that's not the way He talks to me. He's kind of a jokester with me. I mean, I prayed for a year asking Him about starting ministry. For a year, every time I asked Him what to do, He said, I love you, Jeff. Not with that voice. because that sounds kind of mocking and condescending. But he said, I love you, Jeff. And I'm like, yeah, I know, but what do you want me to do? When do you want me to do this? When do you want to start? I love you. So, you know, what he said, I'm sitting there today, I'm saying, so, Lord, what really matters? And what he says is, all that matters is love. And I am fulfilled. Because, you know, he's speaking my language. That's what he's always talked to me about. He's always brought me back to love being, and that's why I love this scripture. You know, your roots will go down deep into God's love and keep you strong. I was strengthened through that. I wasn't disappointed because it wasn't something new and different and exciting. He took me back home. I've been putting my roots down into that soil for years now, and it's what comes up every time. All that really matters to me is love. So the first thing is we need to pay attention. We need to pay attention to what's going on, and that's a harder thing to do than it sounds like. The second thing is we need to listen for his voice. You know, in the Old Testament, the word listen is in the Old Testament 505 times. In the New Testament, it's in there 87 times. I understand the New Testament's a little shorter than the Old Testament, but I thought it would be an important thing. But it just shows you, I think, this is just my opinion, but I think it just shows you how important a contribution the Holy Spirit makes in our lives. Really, God spoke through the prophets, through the leaders in the Old Testament, and a lot of what he said was, you need to listen because you're not paying attention. And when you do listen, you're not doing what I want you to do, and so I'm continually having to bring you back. Listen, he says, listen a lot. In the New Testament, it's only 87 times. That's quite a bit still, but and most of it is by Jesus. And what he's saying is, I have something to say. It's not because he wants you to hear noises. You know, it's not because he wants you to hear sound. It's because he has something to say. When God says listen, it's not because he wants you to listen to the birds. It's because he has something he wants to say to you. He may say it through the birds, and he will. He'll say it in a variety of ways, but he wants you to pay attention. He wants you to listen to a voice. His voice is a voice we should know. And it's the only way we'll really know his voice is if we know the word. You will never understand how God speaks unless you understand the word, unless you know the word, unless you read the Bible and understand what the Bible is saying. You're never going to hear his voice because his voice is a reflection of what's in the word. I mean, or the other way around. His word is a reflection of his voice. That's what his voice sounds like. His voice sounds like the Bible. If you want to know what God sounds like, he sounds like the Bible. He talks like that. Not necessarily the King James Version or the Living Bible. No offense to anybody that gravitates those directions. But he sounds like the Bible. If you read the NIV, he will sound like the NIV. If you read the King James Version, he will sound like the King James Version. Because that's how important the Bible is to him. So we need to pay attention to that. Our part is to be attentive to what he's saying. It's in his presence that we find out just how much he has to say. There's no limit to the number of ways he can communicate. And if you want it, I mean, look at Patrick as an example. I mean, last week he had this encounter with Melissa's son and was thinking about him during this week, and the Lord led him into the word, and he was listening to this, and he felt like that's what he was saying. You know, a little bit before that, he came up to me and said, you think it's okay if I do this? And I'm like, so the Lord is speaking to you, and you want to know if it's okay to encourage Melissa's son. I think that's okay. I mean, obviously, they haven't been here very long, so I didn't want to freak them out. But I felt like there's a covering here, a protection for that. God wants us to hear his voice. He wants us to know what he's saying in the word, by revelation, and even in the way the birds sing. He wants us to know what he has. He wants us to hear his voice. You can hear that in Isaiah 55. Is anyone thirsty? Come to me and drink. Even if you have no money, come and take your choice of milk or wine or milk. It's all free. Why spend your money on food that doesn't give you strength? I love this. Why listen to voices that don't take you anywhere? God's voice is eternal. Why listen to voices that don't feed your spirit? I'm not saying you should or shouldn't do anything. I'm just saying it really makes a difference who we listen to. Why pay for food that does you no good? Listen to me. I guess it's pretty clear. Listen to me, and you will eat what is good. Isn't that encouraging? If you listen to him, you'll eat what is good. You'll find yourself eating what is good. You will enjoy the finest food. Come to me with your ears wide open. Listen, and you will find life. I will make an everlasting covenant with you. I'll give you all the unfailing love I promised to David. Really, Lord? Because he was a man after your own heart. He loved you. He fought for you. Is it really true that I will give you all the unfailing love I promised to David? Yes, it's true. And it's out of the covenant that he has with us that he's giving us these things. Page 3. I have other sheep too. Who would that be? And this is out of John chapter 10. So who's he speaking about? Who are the other sheep? Could it be you? Could it be me? Usually his sheep are Israel. So if he has other sheep from another sheepfold, it's probably everybody but Israel, right? I have other sheep. So you can embrace this. I have other sheep that are not in this sheepfold. I must bring them also. They will listen to my voice. Now, this is remarkable. I can understand him saying that to the children of Israel, to the nation of Israel. But here he's saying it to people who are from another sheepfold. They will listen to my voice, and there will be one flock and one shepherd. My sheep listen to my voice. I know them, and they will follow me. Isn't that cool? That's us. That's you and I. That's us. So when we're talking about listening, we're not just talking about listening like we would listen to the radio or we would listen to an announcement, but this is active listening. He wants us to be with him. And now he's going to speak to us, and he wants us to listen to what he has to say. So this is what a prophecy this is to the Gentiles about God's willingness to listen or about their willingness to listen to God's voice. This is when he calls us my sheep. And I'm liking this. I want to be his sheep. I want to be with him. I want to be where he's at. The peace we experience in his presence is supposed to be the norm, not the exception. And this is hard for us. I mean, even today as I was trying to sit in his presence and dwell and, you know, just dwell there for a little bit, it was hard because I felt a lot of times everything but peace, because all these pullings and distractions don't tend to be very peaceful. But I also spent a crazy time on vacation and experienced the peace of God in an environment that I never thought I would be able to. I mean, we had all kinds of things. This is like, I felt like Chevy Chase on this vacation, you know? Everything was going wrong. I mean, we didn't have the dogs with us, so that scene couldn't happen, but grandma wasn't with us, although grandma fell and hurt herself. You know, it's just like everything that could happen went wrong on this trip. People that were supposed to be there weren't there. People that were supposed to stay the whole time couldn't stay the whole time. Somebody was, you know, had a procedure, thought they had cancer. Somebody else's cancer got worse. You know, somebody who was supposed to be there said every day they were going to be there and never ended up showing up the whole time. And we ended up taking care of a baby for the whole week, which is a joy, except at night. I'm not used to that. I'm not used to a baby sleeping with us and not being asleep. I mean, there's waking up in the morning and not having had much sleep. Now, this is more Jody than I. She's so good. She's such a good wife. She's so kind to me. Anyway, there were times when she fed the baby and I slept, but it was like every other night. It was hard. But in the midst of all this stuff happening, there was peace. I mean, it was okay. It wasn't like everything was falling apart. I think the kids kept looking at us, wondering when we were going to melt down. And it didn't happen, really, maybe once with me. Maybe once. Alex, if you're listening to this, I love you. With all my heart. But there's peace. How does that peace happen? How do we stay in that place where well, I think it's supposed to be the way we live our lives. I don't think we're supposed to live in fear. I don't think we're supposed to live in chaos. I don't think we're supposed to, I mean, you can have chaos all around you and still be at peace. And for some of you, that's your lives. Your lives are complicated and confusing and chaotic at times. But there is a peace that passes all that. And that's the peace that we get in his presence a lot of times. Jesus is with us all the time, encouraging and supporting our spirits from within. That's really true. The peace exists in his presence is meant to be experienced and enjoyed continually. It's only the distractions of life that pull us away, slow us down, pay attention, slow down, pay attention, and listen. See, because this is our tendency. Our tendency is to try it, and if it doesn't work in the first 30 seconds, to give up and go do something else. Or we try it, you know, we sit there and we, Lord, I just want to spend time with you. Close our eyes, we focus our attention on him, and it's just like all we can hear is the faucet going drip, 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 or the dogs barking. Or any number of things. And so we easily move away from that and go on to something else. The question I have is, had we waited another 30 seconds or minute or a couple minutes, maybe we would have seen the breakthrough we've been waiting for. Maybe we would have heard his voice in the direction we needed to hear. Maybe we would have experienced that peace. Maybe we just shortchanged ourselves because we got so impatient that we couldn't stay there very long. It takes time, you guys. It takes discipline to shut all this other stuff out because the payoff is huge. The payoff is the peace of God. Psalm 85 says, I listen carefully to what God the Lord is saying, and he speaks peace to his faithful people. Another 30 seconds, you guys. Try it. When you get to that place where you're about ready to bail, just give yourself another minute. And see what happens. See if there isn't something to this whole idea of being faithful. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 33 says, all who listen to me will live in peace, untroubled by fear of harm. When we first started talking about listening, you probably wrote it off saying, you know, I know I need to listen. I know I need to listen. But it says, all who listen to me will live in peace. That sounds like a promise to me. Sounds like he's saying, if you, then I, if you are faithful to listen to me, you will live in peace. Just saying. His presence is an environment ripe for healing, restoration, and transformation. I love this. When we come into the light of his presence, our hidden fears are utterly destroyed. Why? Because we are so brilliant now, we figured out a way to stop this fear? Or because we've figured out the key that unlocks the whole thing? No. The reality is, when we come into his presence, his light begins to shine, and everything that was in the darkness is brought into the light. And it changes. It changes. It just changes. The nature of things changes. The troubles that seem so overwhelming now aren't that overwhelming anymore. The people that we just can't stand in the light of his presence all of a sudden become people you actually want to pray for instead of against. You know, it's just like everything changes in his light. Things become clear. Things become bright. Listen to what it says in 1 John. Perfect love expels all fear. If we're afraid, it's for fear of punishment. And this shows that we really haven't experienced his perfect love. Experienced his perfect love, not learned about his love, not understood or known his love, but experienced his perfect love. I think his perfect love is experienced in that place of dwelling with him. That's where, I mean, you spend a little bit of time in Psalms, and you'll realize you're not just reading a book, but you're in his presence, and you're experiencing him. Really. You pick up the Bible, and you begin to read the Bible, and you realize really quickly, you're not just reading words, but you're experiencing God. I think that's profound. Not because I said it, because it's true. That's how powerful the word is. In sacrifice and offering, you have not delighted, but you have given me an open ear. And we can't even do this ourselves. We can't even take credit for opening our ears to listen. He gives us an open ear. He gives us this open ear. In sacrifice and offering, all those things we work so hard, the performance, the tasks, the trying to make him happy and everybody else happy, that isn't making that, you know, that's not what he's after. But you have given me an open ear. Burnt offering and sin offering you have not required, but you have given me an open ear. Pay attention, pay attention. He's given us an open ear. That's a gift he's given us, the ability to hear. So pay attention, listen, and respond is the third one. Respond to what we hear. Why? Because he'll take a big stick and smack you around if you don't. No. It's a response to what we've heard as we've been listening. We listen, and then we respond to that out of what we've heard, because we've heard. In fact, everything in our relationship with Jesus is a response. Everything we do. You being here tonight is a response to what he's done. You know, if you do something miraculous, spontaneously amazing, if you pray for somebody and they're healed, if you show generosity and kindness to somebody, you're only just doing what he's already done. You're responding to him. He's the one that's done everything in the relationship, and our response is always to what he said or what he's done. Seek him with your thoughts, desires, words, and actions. We're to seek his presence, not just in the morning quietness, but throughout the day. There's nothing we can't lay before him, and confidently watch him move. Too many times, we're just not really open with Jesus. You know, we ask him to help us escape these difficult situations we're in. But we're reluctant to ask him for the perseverance to go through things. So we'll ask him for an escape route, but we won't ask him for the strength and courage to go through stuff. And I think most of the time, what he's listening for, what he's waiting for, the response he's looking for is, Lord, I know this is going to be hard, but I ask you for the patience and the perseverance to go through it, because I know I'm going to learn a lot through this. And so help me learn. Don't just save me from hard things, difficult situations, but help me learn by taking me through things. A lot of times, that's the response that you'll get in a place of dwelling with him, is that kind of response. Brother Lawrence, who's just a very humble, meek, young monk who lived a long time ago, met with Jesus in the midst of his day. And no matter what, he was encouraged by what he encountered there. It was an experience for him. And this is what he says in one of his writings. There is not in the world a kind of life more sweet and delightful than that of a continual conversation with God. Those only can comprehend it who practice and experience it. And I'd say the same thing about dwelling with God in the context of what we're talking about tonight. You can listen to me talk forever about my experiences with dwelling with God. You can read the Bible and watch how other people experience this opportunity of dwelling with God. But until you do it and experience it, you're never really going to know how important it is and how valuable it is to your life. You need it. James chapter 4 says you don't have what you want because you don't ask for it. Well, part of our response is asking for him to do things. Not asking for him to give us toys, but asking for us for his character so that we can do the things that he's called us to do. He really wants us to ask for. I mean, too many times we get in this situation with God where we're, you know how I feel, Lord. You know what's on my mind. You know my fears. You know everything about me, Lord. And he's saying, yeah, but let's just rehearse it one more time. You know, you tell me what is it that you think that you understand that you need? And then when you start articulating that back to him, you realize you really haven't thought through this whole thing. You know, I want you just to take all my pain away. Lord, heal my heart. And, you know, the Lord will say, this is how he talks to me. He'll say, well, what do you mean, heal your heart? Well, you know, all these things that are inside from all these bad things that have happened and all these negative experiences, Lord, just purge this stuff out. And and he'll say, you know how that boss that you don't like, who seems to be standing in the way of where you want to get, just can't seem to get that person out of the way so you can really move forward? I'm doing it right there. You just think it's a minor distraction. You just think it's a hassle. But I'm teaching you so much through this experience. I am healing your heart. I'm teaching you how to love somebody that's not very lovable. I'm teaching you how to stick with things and not give up. And so a lot of times he's teaching us the things through the very experiences we're asking him to get rid of in our lives. I'm not saying that every one of those experiences, every one of those uncomfortable situations is from him, but a lot of times he'll use those to get us to where he wants us to go so he fully has our hearts. When everything is going wrong, stop and affirm your trust in him. Things go wrong all the time. People let you down and you let them down. When things seem to be falling apart, stop what you're doing. Affirm your trust in him. Not pull yourself up by your bootstraps and get back on the horse. I might be mixing my metaphors just a touch. Pull yourself up by your cowboy boots and get on your horse. When things seem to be falling apart, stop what you're doing and affirm your trust in him. Tell him again that you trust him. Then just move forward with him, never leaving his loving presence. I love this. It's Psalm 131. I have calmed and quieted myself like a weaned child who no longer cries for its mother's milk. Yes, like a weaned child, my soul is my soul within me. This is David. And this is David's humility being on display. Because he's got lots of ambition. Lots of what we would call selfish ambition. But he's not being distracted by that. He's putting a stop to that. He calmed and quieted himself. He didn't ask God to calm and quiet him. He calmed and quieted himself. That's self-discipline. That's not alive and well in our culture right now, if you haven't noticed. He calmed and quieted himself. Like a weaned child. What does that mean? Well, like a weaned child, he's no longer wanting his mother's milk. He no longer needs that. The very thing that seemed to be indispensable in his past, now he can do without. He's maturing. When he's saying that, like a weaned child no longer cries for his mother's milk. Yes, like a weaned child is my soul within me. He's saying he's growing up. He's learned to calm and quiet himself. He's not asking to be spoon-fed spiritually, but he's taking responsibility for himself. That comes out of his dwelling in his presence. That kind of experience, that kind of spiritual growth comes from that. So what does it mean to re-envision? Now that you know what you know, go. Take the experience that you had from paying attention and listening and responding to him. Take the experience, understanding, and confidence that Jesus gave you during that time in his presence and let it move you forward. Let it propel you forward. It's all like this is a dynamic environment. It isn't. You just don't spend time with the Lord dwelling in his presence so you can hear his voice, so you can have more information. You have more information than most people ever need. If you've been a Christian for any amount of time, you've probably heard more sermons and got more information than you'll ever need in your lifetime. It's just that we don't really do anything with it. And so the whole idea of re-envisioning is taking what you've experienced in that place of dwelling with him and doing something with it, letting it affect you, let it change you. I love this, what it says in Hebrews chapter 13. Now may the God of peace who brought up from the dead our Lord Jesus, the great shepherd of the sheep, and ratified an eternal covenant with his blood, may he equip you with all you need for doing his will. That equipping, I think, happens mostly as we dwell in his presence. If you're dwelling with his word in his presence. May he produce in you, through the power of Jesus Christ, every good thing that is pleasing to him. Ah, this is it. This is the key. All glory and honor to him forever and ever. Pleasing God is not about making him happy. Pleasing God does not mean making God happy. God doesn't sad and he wants you to make him happy. He's not depressed, and he wants you to get him out of his depression. That is not what pleasing God means. Pleasing God means aligning ourselves with his character, being like him. That's pleasing God. And you really should want to please God. That should be your highest priority. In fact, if you're thinking about doing something, making a choice or making a decision in your life, and you're wondering whether it's really God's will for your life to do this, all you need to do is ask him, is this pleasing to you, Lord? And you'll get your answer really quickly. Because pleasing is aligning ourselves with his character, and committing to dwell in his presence empowers us to do that. That's where we're empowered to do that. I love this too. The most effective way in resisting evil is to draw near to God. And so many times we're afraid of the devil and what he's doing and his schemes and his plans. Well, first of all, let me remind you that there's only one of him. And he's probably not in Longview. So when you're praying and addressing the devil, you're probably talking to the wrong guy. You're probably talking to one of his little peon dudes, you know, down the food chain a bit, who's focused on you because you're an easy target, because it's easy to distract you. And you don't know the word of God well enough to know how to stand up and say, wait a minute, this is not God. I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to respond this way. I'm not going to act like this anymore, because this isn't God that's talking. This is either my flesh or somebody who's against God, an enemy of God. And so it lets you know where. But the easiest way, the most foolproof way to resist the devil, resist evil, is in his presence. The enemy is defeated when our lives are pleasing to God. There's nothing more that he can do. When our lives are pleasing to God, there's nothing more. He runs out of ideas. He just stops, because when our lives are pleasing to God, because we've been in his presence and enabled to please him in his presence, he just lets go. I will sing to the Lord as long as I live. I will praise my God to my last breath. May all my thoughts be pleasing to him, for I rejoice in the Lord. Jesus wants us all in. Weakness, like compromise, like laziness, like unrepentant sin, can be relentless snares that disappear in his presence, that disappear as we don't dwell in his presence. You can read this. Let's just go to the end. This little book, Jesus Calling, has made a huge difference to me in the last year that I've been reading it. And I've been trying to be faithful to read it the first thing I do in the morning, first thing in the morning. It's like two paragraphs. It won't put you to sleep because you haven't been awake that long. And it's not that long. It's pretty easy to do. But you would be amazed at how, with a little bit of focus, first thing in the morning, your day tends to go the right direction. How many of you wake up in the morning and you feel like you have a list of things in front of you that need to be done, and about half of them you don't want to do? Yeah. Or you have a list of things that qualities in a person that you're not, and all those are confronting you every day. Or how you failed yesterday and you don't want to do that anymore. Dan, why don't you come on up? Let's get the worship team back up here. You know, that's really typical, waking up in the morning and feeling like you have a job list to do that you're never going to get done, and you're never going to keep God happy, and you're probably going to run off to your job and not spend any time with him and dwell in his presence in the morning, and it's going to be another one of those days where you're chasing your tail all day long. That's typical. That's really typical. And so I need focus first thing in the morning. I don't think you can live your life by Jesus Calling. And I don't think it's any kind of in-depth devotional study at all. But I need all the help I can get. And if it gets me focused, I'm going to do it. Well, Saturday, this is what I read. This is August 29th out of Jesus Calling. Is that Friday? Demonstrate your trust in me while sitting quietly in my presence. It just happened that I was teaching on his, but the whole book is about his presence, so, you know, that's kind of where that's at. Put aside all that's waiting to be done and refuse to worry about anything. Do you like it already? This is a great way to start your day. Put aside all that's waiting to be done and refuse to worry about anything. That's calming your soul, quieting and calming your soul. This sacred time together strengthens you and prepares you to face whatever the day will bring. By waiting with me before you begin the day's activities, you proclaim the reality of my living presence. Are you listening? Are you paying attention? This fact of faith, waiting before working, is noted in the spirit world, where your demonstration of trust weakens principalities and powers of darkness. That's what happens. The most effective way to resist evil is to draw near me. When you need to take action, I will guide you clearly through my spirit and my word. The world is so complex and overstimulating that you can easily lose your sense of direction, doing countless unnecessary activities will dissipate your energy. When you spend time with me, I restore your sense of direction. Everything I've said for the last 45 minutes is right there. It's all there. I'm not idolizing or lifting up Jesus' calling as anything more than it is, but it is a tool to help us stay focused. And it really says where my heart's at for you guys as a congregation. I want us to have practiced, experienced dwelling in his presence. I think it's part of the way we move forward. It's part of our future. It's part of where we're going. It's going to help us get where we want to go. And I can say unequivocally, we're moving towards Jesus. That's what we're moving towards, is more relationship with him, deeper relationship with him, so we can hear his voice, know what it sounds like, respond to his voice, and then reconfigure things in our lives because of what we've heard. When I read this short paragraph, I came out of that time with God convinced I could do something.